Joelle Frazier was born in San Francisco in 1966. Her parents were young bohemians who had dreams of being writers. But the drink, drugs, and parties of the era got in the way of their ambitions. Frazier's parents split a couple years after she was born. While her mother worked, two-year-old Joelle was left with her Aunt Kathy, a free spirit who lived on a houseboat in Sausalito. Joelle Frazier has written a memoir of her hippie childhood called The Territory of Men. Frazier's mother ended up living with several men, one who abused Joelle. Now her mother is a therapist, and the two women are very close. Joelle Frazier begins her book with an oft-told story in their family, the trip to the hospital for her birth.
Mother's Day, 1966. Watch us as we barrel across that bright bridge toward San Francisco, the gray waves of the ocean seething and crashing below. It's a warm May day, the windows are wide open, and my mother's black hair flies wildly around her sweating face. We're late for the hospital, but traffic is light, and this is a party after all, one that began in the morning and lasted all night and hasn't stopped for years. In the back seat, my father sits between two friends, smoking a cigarette, lips stained dark from gin and grape juice. He grins at my mother in front, tells her to hold on. He says, wouldn't it be a great story if they had a baby on the Golden Gate Bridge? The Mamas and the Papas, California Dreamin', comes on the radio, and everyone sings, the words swept up by scarves of fog and spread over the sea. They're drunk, all of them, all but my mother, who leans back to ease the pain, belly swollen, legs braced, because it's almost time and I'm pushing to get out.
That's Joelle Frazier reading from her memoir, The Territory of Men. Joelle, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
You know, it's so perfect that California Dreamin' was playing on the radio. Obviously, this is not one of your memories. Was this a story your mother always told you?
Yes, it's a notorious story in the family that I was almost born on the Golden Gate Bridge. They had left a party. And they said, oh, it's time, she's going to have the baby, let's go. And everyone wanted to pile into the car and be, you know, the party just kept going wherever you were. So, and this was a wonderful thing to celebrate, of course.
Your mom lived in Sausalito in California after she left your dad and worked at a TV station. And you write that she used to leave you with your aunt, that your aunt, her sister, very young sister, was her babysitter. And you have this image of your mother lowering you down in a basket to your sister who lived on a houseboat in Sausalito.
Yes. Yeah, it's a very famous houseboat area. It's called Gate 5. And they were just these broken ships, just, you know, with missing planks and no railings. And it was just this wild place. And that's where Kathy lived. She lived on a houseboat. And it was called The Love. And it was hard to get there. You had to go, there was a map. You had to climb over ferries and over roofs to get there. And that's where I spent my days when I was 2, 3, 4 years old.
So what was life like with your aunt on The Love?
On The Love. It was a party. That was where people played music. The musicians would hang out with Kathy there, and people would get stoned and play guitars, and sometimes I would get an instrument like a tambourine or something like that, and I would play along, and it was just full of music and rock and roll and lots of pot, and sometimes if the musicians weren't playing, they would play records. So music was the event. That it was sort of a concert atmosphere. That was why people gathered.
So this is 68, 69. Did she go to the Fillmore? Was she attending the acid tests, the Kankakee, the Mary Pranksters happenings?
Yeah, she went to all that stuff. She was always backstage. She was very beautiful, and she was kind of, I wouldn't call her a groupie, but that's the closest term that comes to mind. She had a lot of boyfriends at Quicksilver and Santana and people like that, and so I was usually part of that as a child.
How'd they treat you as a kid? Did they give you you know, little hits from their reefer, or treat you a little adult, or what?
Yes, I was treated like a mini adult. All the kids were. In fact, I think it was considered rude to tell us what to do, to tell us to go to bed. I also think that, you know, they were in their early 20s, and for many of them, having grown up in the 50s as kids, where they were told what to do all the time, this was a time when they could relive their childhood. And so to have me around as a four-year-old was a way to be childlike again. So it was almost as if we were all children together, even as they were treating me like an adult. It's kind of a paradox, but we were children and we were adults all at the same time, and there was no distinction between me and them. I smoked pot just like they did. My aunt was very proud of the way I could take a hit with a roach, just like the adults.
I think,
at three.
You know, another scene from your book that really got me was that when you were just a toddler, I think you were maybe 3 years old, your mom would send you off to the 7-Eleven with a list of groceries, milk or bread, Marlboros. She literally sent you around the corner for a pack of cigs alone. How did you
yes,
know?
Across the street.
How did you even know what was on the list? You couldn't read.
I couldn't read, but she would point, you know, over there. I knew 7-Eleven was across the street and down the little way, and the clerk knew me. And I would just hand her the list, and she'd gather the groceries for me, and I would haul them back across the street. And it wasn't because my mother was lazy. I think she just wanted me to think for myself and be enterprising. And as I said, I was treated like a little adult. So I waddled across the street with the cigarettes and the peanut butter, and it's a funny story.
She also let you sell your paintings on the street by yourself. Were you scared?
No. When I did that, I was 6 years old. I sold those watercolor paintings for 50 cents a piece. And on Bridgeway in Sausalito, this was like Woodstock every day. I mean, it was nuts. And I loved it. I was part of this scene. I was one of the folks and carrying my little rolled-up paintings. But then one day a man pulled me aside, and it became a very sad memory for me. In fact, that's one of the most vivid memories I have of my childhood, was being pulled aside by that man into that stairwell that I wrote about. And that's a sad thing, but in writing about it, it transformed it for me. And it's not just a painful memory anymore. It's something else now.
He pulled you aside and molested you.
Yes. So that summer was beautiful, though. I mean, up until that happened, I loved it. And after that happened, I never went back and I never painted again. So it's sad. It's bittersweet because I had the 2 months of selling my paintings and walking around. You know, my mother was up at home somewhere. But then that happened.
You know, that's my impression of a lot of the stories in your book. They have both sides. You could appreciate the freedom you were given, or just this amazing experience of going along on your parents, your mother's spiritual journey or journey through the 60s, but it also had a scary underside.
It had its price. There was the freedom and there was the price.
What contact did you have with your biological father?
I used to see him every year. He lived in Hawaii most of the time, and I used to visit him once a year. And that was always just this great respite and sanctuary to go over there. And I would just play on the beach all day, and that's how I saw him.
And what was he by trade?
Oh, he was a writer. That's what he wanted to be. But my dad did all kinds of jobs. He could never keep a job for more than a year. I can't even tell you what he did. He just worked whatever. He'd work at a golf shop. He'd do insurance. He'd bartend. Just whatever he could to make some money. He drove a taxi.
And he drank.
And he drank. And he drank and he drank and he drank himself to death.
Did you ever live with him?
Yes, I lived with him for 1 year in Washington, and that was a hard year. He drank a lot that year. There was something about the writing. He was trying to write a novel, and the writing kept him drinking because it was so hard for him to write, I think. Even though he was good, it was hard. And so he drank, and we eventually got evicted. I got pulled out of school because he couldn't pay the rent.
Did he ever finish his novel?
He did. It's called Gone to Maui, published in 83, and it's a cult classic in Hawaii now. My brother teaches it in the high school there, and the locals like it because it's a local book and has pidgin English in it, and so it's amazing that it still lives on, that his book lives on.
Joelle Frazier's new memoir is The Territory of Men. We'll continue our conversation after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're back with writer Joelle Frazier. Her new memoir is The Territory of Men. Both your parents drank one time or another. I think your mother was in AA and she became sober. And
yes,
she's been
when
sober.
I was 14.
Yeah.
When I was 14, so a very long time. I am so grateful to AA. I can't say enough about it. It saved all of our lives, really.
So did you drink?
I did. I drank a lot in my 20s. I used to go to dive bars and that sort of thing. And it was where I felt close to my father because I met my father in bars. That's where we met. I would meet him for lunch in some bar, and he would have, you know, six beers and a piece of pie and a bite of something I ate. So I was drawn to drinking. It was where I felt close to my father. And now I don't do that anymore.
Did you also do AA, or was it never that serious for you?
No, I drink occasionally. I go to a program called Al-Anon, which is for friends and families of alcoholics. And that's where I make my peace with it. And I still have, I'll never be over the issues of my parents drinking, even though my mother's sober. It's, you know, it's formed part of who I am. To grow up the child of an alcoholic, I don't think you ever are done with it.
I have to ask, where's your Aunt Kathy now?
Well, she lives in Napa, and she's a nurse, and she has a son, and she watches, she counts hawks. She's a volunteer for the Hawk Society there, and counts them in order to watch their migration patterns. It's a great volunteer society. They do a lot of to watch global warming and that kind of thing. And she's got feathers and rocks all over her house, and she camps, and she listens to the 60s, and you should just see her when the music comes on. Sometimes just tears come down her face, you know, because she lives in this tract neighborhood. It's very straight, conservative town, and it's just not where her heart is, but she's there to give her son some stability.
Did you interview Kathy for the book in your research?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I interviewed her. That's how I got some of those details. You know, at 3 years old, how would I remember some of these things?
So
I
interviewed both. Or your birth. I mean,
yeah, or how did I remember being in my mother's womb? Yeah, I interviewed both my mom and my Aunt Kathy, and my mom gave me her journals. She had written journals. My mother's a writer, too, a wonderful writer, and she gave me her journals from her 20s, and I actually put some of them verbatim into the book.
Yeah, I was thinking that must have been a very strange experience to read your mother's journals about what she was feeling and thinking when you were just a baby, and knowing you know the end of your story. So it's like watching your own personal train wreck, I would think.
It is. It was very sad because she's talking about the breakup and saying, you know, if my father, her husband, if my father didn't keep writing, if he couldn't do it, that she knew that they were going to have to break up because their lives were falling apart and he was drinking too much. And I'm watching her each day because they're chronicled by date like a diary, and watching it get worse and worse and worse. And I just wanted to go back and rewrite it and say, you know, keep trying. Don't break up. You know, I'm only one or 2 years old. Please don't break this family up.
Well, I really appreciated talking with you today. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Joelle Frazier's new memoir is The Territory of Men.